Greetings, crew. This is your nav speaking. It's about 6 o'clock in the morning here in Andalusia on April 5th, 2012. And this is a nav briefing, which I would call, Nikki's sitting on my notes here. Nikki, move. Nav briefing number 7, navigating chaos. I'm dedicating this briefing to those members of the Gaian Navigation Experiment who subscribe to my crew notes. There's over 350 of you now. And I dedicate this briefing to all of you, but especially to those of you who may feel that you're not really following the process, that you can't keep up with it, that it's too complex, that it's more than you bargained for. And even those of you who are among the faithful or, let's say, consistent correspondents who write to me, who interact with me, who talk with me on Skype, which anyone can do if you like. Even among those more active and intimate participants, I know that you have difficulty at moments keeping up with the process. So I'm dedicating this nav briefing to all of you, including those who make an exceptional effort to keep up with the process. And what I'm going to address here is what it takes to keep up with the process. Now, to open this briefing, let me offer you some syntax. This is not the Turton syntax, although, of course, the Turton has an ample supply of syntax for you. No, this is not the Turton syntax, but this is a syntax that comes out of what is called chaos theory or complexity theory. Now, I'm going to explain at length a little bit in this talk what is chaos theory or complexity theory, which is the latter term for the former. It was simply renamed complexity theory. It was originally called chaos theory, and before that it was called stochastic theory. So those are terms, okay? And in this briefing, you'll find out what those terms mean, but and how they're relevant to the Gaian Navigation Experiment. But for the moment, I'm going to give you a piece of syntax from chaos / complexity theory. And this syntax goes like this, quote, extreme sensitivity dependent upon initial conditions, unquote. Now, how would I define that? Well, how would I translate that? How would I convert that for you into terms that are relevant to the Gaian Navigation Experiment, especially at this critical, exciting, fantastically promising key moment of the spring of 2012. How would I translate that? Well, quote, extreme sensitivity dependent upon initial conditions, end quote. It's sort of like a definition of foreplay. You know, if you want to fuck someone and you want to be fucked and you want to do that under optimal conditions, then you damn well better pay attention to the extreme sensitivity that precedes the conditions of Congress. So, there's an analogy here, an analogy that would be self-evident to a tantrika, to a kalika, and to someone deeply immersed in the Gaia navigation experiment. Extreme sensitivity dependent upon initial conditions is exactly what this whole experiment is about, my friends. Look at that syntax. Please, look at it carefully for a moment. Look at that language. If you do, you'll see that it has two parts. The first part is extreme sensitivity. That's your part, your role, your mission, impossible, if you choose to accept it. Your challenge here is to enter and remain in extreme sensitivity. But to what? To what are you sensitive? It's like foreplay. It is foreplay. You know? You are extremely sensitive to the coming act of sexual congress. That's what foreplay is. Foreplay is extreme sensitivity to the coming act of sexual congress. Okay? So we're now in the intense foreplay of the Gaia navigation experiment when we're coming to congress. Well, what is congress in terms of the Gaia navigation experiment? Quite simply, folks, whether or not you like the sexual metaphor, it's interactivity with the designs and purposes of the wisdom goddess. It's interactivity with her intentions. And if you wish to be profoundly and immortally interactive with the divine Sophia, you must enter extreme sensitivity. That's the first part of the syntax. Second part of the syntax, dependent upon initial conditions, end quote. What does this mean? I have been intending to communicate this to you for over a year now. Well, a little under a year, because correction began on March 19th, 2011, and I didn't really send out the invitation to the Gaia Navigation Experiment until June 2011. But let's say 8, 9, 10 months. My invitation was to bring you to attending. This is the operative term, my friends. To attending to the initial conditions of correction. As I've said before, the period of time between March 2011 and March 2014, the year March 2014, is not the time when correction is achieved. It's the time for the setting of the initial conditions of correction. And the purpose of the Gaia Navigation Experiment is to attune you, to prepare you, and to foreplay you erotically, magically, morally, into the initial conditions of her correction. This is what I am doing in my role as navigator. So, to sum it up, and to offer the consummate syntax of this experiment, I would put it like this. She requires, Gaia Sophia requires your, quote, extreme sensitivity, end quote. To, quote, the dependent initial conditions of her experiment, end quote. the initial conditions of the redirection and recalibration of Anthropos 10 are happening right now. And the time period of that recalibration process is March 2011 to March 2014. That's what she's doing. She's recapitulating her entire history as an Aeon. She's remembering all that she went through to become the planet Earth. The divine Aeon Sophia is recalling everything that happened and everything that was entailed in her separation from the Pleroma and de-escalation into the material embodiment of a planet, including the emergence of the human species on that planet. And so right now, at the very moment that I speak, she is recapitulating those experiences in her own life as a divine Aeon. And at the same time, she is setting the initial conditions for Anthropos 11 and for the next phase of this divine experiment on this planet. That is what she's doing. And I don't know how I could be more explicit or more cogent in describing to you what she is doing. But the big question is, what are you doing at this moment, right now, that is interactive with what she's doing? Well, the answer to that is open-ended, my friends. And the answer to that is yet another question. But the question is only one question. The question is singular. And as I used to say back in Santa Fe years ago, not simplistic, but simplific. Simplific being an alchemical term. By simplific, I mean you reduce all the elements of a situation to their essential and fundamental truth. There is a simplific solution to the world problem today. There is a simplific solution to facing the insanity of the globalist psychopaths and predators. There is a simplific solution to everything, and if it is not simplific, it is no solution. So what is the simplific factor in your awareness of what I just described, in your recognition of what I just described, that the divine Sophia is undertaking her correction and setting the initial conditions? What is a simplific solution? Your participation in those conditions. That's all. You attend to the formulating of those conditions. You observe her story. You hold in the framework of her story your understanding of the formulating of those conditions of her correction. And you engage. And how do you engage? The answer is simplific. You engage through your so-called extreme sensitivity. This term, extreme sensitivity, comes from chaos or complexity theory. Now, it's my intention in this briefing to give you the only briefing you need ever to know what that is. I'll give you some references, some links to YouTube clips, so you can do your homework. But I swear to you that what I say in this briefing is the only thing you ever need to know about complexity theory and chaos theory. Why? Simple. Because it's what you need to know to engage it. All the rest is bullshit and distraction. All the rest is narcissistic masturbation. There is only one thing that you need to know to engage in the conditions of Gaia's correction. And I'm telling you right now what that is. It is the responsibility that you assume, every single one of you, as a member of the human species, as a human animal, it is the responsibility that you assume to allow yourself to enter extreme sensitivity. If you're not in extreme sensitivity, you cannot do this practice. I've said before that the Gaia Navigation Experiment is a special case, a special event unfolding in Planetary Tantra. Planetary Tantra is the instruction given to the human species for interactive magic with Gaia, with the divine Sophia, who is embodied in the earth, Gaia. Therefore, Planetary Tantra is the instruction for the remaining 200 odd years of Kali Yuga down to the end of this Kalpa. If you want to be aligned, if you want your life to be embraced, absorbed, dissolved, and liberated within the greater life of the earth, then Planetary Tantra is where you want to go. The Gaia Navigation Experiment is a specific and time-factored experiment within the general frame of Planetary Tantra. The conditions that are required of you to enter this experiment are that you allow yourself to feel in extremity. You allow yourself, your body and soul instrument, your mind, your heart, your will, your desire, you allow all of those components of your everyday self to be totally absorbed and immersed and dedicated to extreme sensitivity. This is the way you do it. And if, why am I taking the time to elaborate this so painfully and so carefully in such detail? The answer is very simple. I know, I trust that those of you who have signed on to these crew notes do so because of a deep motivation. You have a deep mutual or common motive. You want to be involved with the earth in a way that was never previously conceivable. I totally share this motive with you, obviously. And I am here to support and encourage this motive and to teach you how to do it. And I'm here to tell you that you can master this process and that you can rise to the challenge of the Gaia Navigation Experiment. It's not an intellectual process. You don't have to master astronomy. You don't have to master astrology. You don't have to follow every nuance, every fucking nuance of the apogee and perigee surges. You don't have to cognitively, psychologically, and epistemologically incorporate every nuance and theme of the Dakini shifts. You don't have to toggle back and forth madly between the apogee and perigee surges. I know that all this is a lot to handle, my friends. How do I know? Because I handle it all the fucking time. Who would know better than me that it's too much to handle? I know it's too much to handle. But I want to tell you something now. From the depths of my heart and from the profondeur of my intelligence, that it doesn't matter whether you can handle it or not. What matters is that you stay in extreme sensitivity. Stay there, and you will last to the conclusion of this experiment. That is the essential thing, to remain in extreme sensitivity, that is, in the language of chaos or complexity theory, dependent upon initial conditions. So, the formula is simple, my friends, my allies, crew members. The formula is simple. She sets the initial conditions, and you remain in the extreme sensitivity for engagement with these conditions. That's all there is to it. Now, in this briefing, I want to explain to you some things that may ease your mind and make the Gaia Navigation Experiment a more user-friendly process for you. Honestly, I mean, as the inceptor of this experiment, I myself am totally convinced that it is a user-friendly project and that it works better when it is simple, simplific, and self-evident. Period. I myself am totally convinced of this, and I have been convinced of this for a long, long time in this short life of mine. Now, I cannot convince you out there, my friends and allies, but I can ask you and invite you to see the lucidity of my own self-evident truth and to realize that it's not my own truth alone. Anyone who enters into this experience finds this truth, this veracity, this vivid, stunning, self-evident veracity. So what I say now, the words that come out of my mouth, the words that are being recorded here on April 5th, 2012, are all intended to point you and to aim you in that direction. So, with that little prelude, let me go into an introduction, an overview, perhaps, of chaos theory just a general introduction to what is chaos theory. And then coming back at the end of this briefing to your engagement with chaos theory. Because theory means nothing at all if you can't engage with it. You know, in a book called The Act of Creation, written by Arthur Koestler, I think in the 60s, fantastic book, by the way, Koestler points out in The Act of Creation that the Greek word theoria meant beholding. It did not mean an abstract model that you construct in your mind that might correspond to the cosmos, that might correspond to the living and imminent phenomena of the cosmos. No. To the ancient Greeks, theoria meant a direct beholding of the phenomena of the cosmos. And in addition, the cognitive apprehension of those phenomena, that is to say, to see and comprehend them in the same moment of beholding. And needless to say, this approach is the epitome of Goethean science, of the morphological perception of nature proposed by Goethe. So that is the theoria as we approach it as an approach, and then comes the theoria as an engagement. So let's look a little for a moment at the nature of this theoria of chaos theory as it emerged in the history of our time, and then move on to our engagement with that theory. Chaos theory, when it initially came into definition, was called a stochastic. This word, stochastic, is from the Greek word stochastos, which means either aim or guess. Very interesting. The word, the Greek origin of stochastic means either it's something that you aim for or it's something that you guess for. And that's a really remarkable ambiguity, isn't it? Sort of like, well, I guess I'm aiming for something. It's a lucky guess what I'm aiming for. Or maybe I'm guessing at what I'm aiming for. Or maybe I'm aiming at what I'm guessing for. I mean, this is the beautiful ambiguity of this term. And it refers to systems in nature whose behavior cannot be determined by a rigid, predetermined formula. Cannot be, for instance, mathematically predicted or calculated. You know, one of the definitions of science is that it's predictive. If you formulate an accurate scientific theory, then you're supposed to be able to predict on the basis of that theory. According to this conventional, rigid and conventional concept, if you formulate a scientific law, then you can, then the proof of the veracity of that law is simple. You can predict on the basis of that law. If that law is a mathematical formula, for instance, then you can extrapolate a mathematical formula that will predict certain events, certain results. If these results occur, then the formula is correct. Well, that may be one very limited form of science, and it may be valid on its own terms. I would say that that is one self-defined version of silence within the limits of the first attention. Predictability and rational continuity belong to the limits of the first attention. To that extent, they're correct. To that extent, they're verifiable. But what happened with the emergence of the stochastic view of physics is that certain scientists realized that there are systems operating in nature which are non-deterministic, sporadic, and novel and unpredictable. These were loosely called turbulent processes. And so a stochastic or turbulent process is one that behaves in a non-deterministic way. And yet, in a certain respect, although its further developments cannot be rigidly predicted, they can be anticipated. This is the key syntax. In the Gaia navigation experiment, we don't predict anything. For instance, I don't predict that the Gaia navigation experiment ends in the spring of 2014. Absolutely not. If you were to quote me in that respect, you would be wrong, and you would be misrepresenting my presentation of this experiment. I don't predict that the Gaia navigation experiment or the initial conditions of Sophia's correction concludes in the spring of 2014. I anticipate that it concludes at that moment, you see? So you cannot predict stochastic, non-deterministic, non-linear behavior in nature. Yet you can observe it everywhere. But you cannot predict its outcome, but you can anticipate its outcome. So the engagement with this theory of stochastic phenomena, this theory of chaos / complexity, is like a foreplay. In foreplay, you anticipate orgasm, you know, hopefully on both parties. So you anticipate the outcome of fucking, which is simultaneous orgasm of both parties, male and female, in the act of sexual congress. Well, what is foreplay? Foreplay is the anticipation of this outcome. It's not a prediction of the outcome, because you can't be sure that it'll happen that way. But if you attune to the act of foreplay, to the rituals and gestures of foreplay, and if you remain in extreme sensitivity to foreplay, then the chances are good that you will have the anticipated outcome. And the better the foreplay, the better the chances. Well, the sexual and erotic metaphor is germane. The sexual erotic metaphor here is absolutely applicable to the Gaian navigation experiment. We're in the foreplay. The period of time from March 2011 to March 2014 is like the foreplay of her correction. If you want to be in on that foreplay, then be in on the experiment. This is what it's about. This is the invitation. Now, I'm posting links, a couple of YouTube links, actually, relative to this briefing. In the Cuckoo Notes, number 18. You find that one of these links is to a short clip on YouTube called Chaos Theory Documentary. The other link is simply to a YouTube clip of 4 minutes and 49 seconds called Chaos Theory. And I advise all of you to stop right now, pause this recording, go to YouTube, and type in Chaos Theory, and listen to this clip. This clip explains, quote, that Chaos Theory contends that complex and unpredictable results occur in systems that are sensitive to small changes in their initial conditions. This small changes effect is best illustrated and commonly known as the butterfly effect, which states that the flapping of a butterfly's wings in the Amazon could cause tiny atmospheric changes that, over time, over a certain time, could affect weather patterns in New York or elsewhere in the world. Such systems are known as chaotic systems, etc., 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 end quote. Now, if you listen to this very brief clip on chaos theory, and I strongly urge you to do so, you'll see that it refers to a French physicist named Henri Poincaré. And Poincaré was a remarkable figure in the inception of chaos / complexity theory. His role is extremely simple and something that anyone can understand in a New York minute. The amazing thing, however, to me anyway, the amazing factor in this is that the indication of Henri Poincaré regarding chaos theory points directly to the Gnostic and Sophianic vision of the cosmos. As this little clip points out, Poincaré observed that there was a problem with the premise of predictability in science. Up until his time, around 1903, special theory of relativity 1905 to follow, general theory 1910 or 1911 to follow, all these were total distractions and detours from the essential understanding of the physics of the cosmos. But at that critical moment, around 1903, Poincaré pointed out his observation, and that was this. Well, yeah, you can say that the validity and veracity of science depends on predictability. So if you go back to Newton and you follow Newton's laws of motion and the preservation of the laws of physics according to Newton, you should be able to use an initial set of conditions to determine a resulting set of conditions. That's standard. Science is veracious if it produces formulas and laws that allow us to predict how things will happen. Poincaré observes that you simply can't do this because there is a factor in the universe, in the way that things work, that simply does not allow this to be done. It's an illusion. It's a presumption that you can predict in such a rigid manner. And for the illustration of his point, Poincaré put forth what is called, and it gives me huge delight to say this, the three-body problem. Poincaré said that when we're talking about Newtonian physics and predictability, we can rely on it to give us correct results when the interactions of two bodies are concerned. But we cannot rely on it when the interactions of three bodies are concerned. Or four, or five, or six, or seven, or eight, obviously. But not even three. And this is called the three-body problem. And the illustration of the three-body problem is routinely set out in terms of the three bodies that are most familiar to us in our setting in the solar system. And what are those three bodies? They are the sun, the moon, and the earth. In my interpretations of the Nag Hammadi text, I pointed out that the critical cosmological text called the Trimorphic Protonuia refers to the three-body problem. It refers to the three-body cosmos of Poincaré, which is also the three-body cosmos of Gnostic and Sophianic cosmology. Now, if you listen to this little clip on chaos theory, which I've linked in Kunotes 18, you'll see where they come to mention Lorentz, the scientist Lorentz, who introduced the term butterfly effect. And this happened around the early 60s when they began to plot the turbulent, stochastic, or unpredictable features of nature with computers. And at that time, scientists fell under the illusion that they could track the behavior of chaos with computers. Well, they can't really. They can never catch up with the behavior of chaos. The only thing that they can arrive at is a kind of phantom calculation that arises from the shadow effect of the after effect of true chaos. It reminds me of that incident described in the Hypostasis of the Archons and a couple of other Gnostic cosmological texts, referring to the desire of the Archons to possess Eve and to interbreed with the human species. It is said that the Archons wish to possess Eve, meaning the mother of the human species, meaning the biological template of the human genome. In other words, they wish to hack the human genome, hack into it, and introduce their own archontic codes. But the Gnostic seers assure us that they were not able to do this, and that in fact they only attained or seized upon a phantom version of Eve, which is called the Sarkic Eve, S-A-R-K-I-C. The Sarkic Eve. They never were able to rape Eve. They never were able, the Archons, to hack the human genome. The most they could do was fantasize that they had violated a fleeting phantom of her reality. And it's the same thing with the computerized attempt to calculate chaos or complexity phenomena. They're really not able to do it. But what they do is they come up with a kind of shadow replication of that phenomenon. And that is what we call fractals. You know, there's no such thing as a fractal in nature, really. Scientists who are obsessed with the beauty of fractals and the self-replicating patterns of nature will tell you that these patterns exist in nature, but they really don't. Nature is beyond fractals. Fractals are simply mental or archontic simulations of what nature does. It's as if you were having sex and you were a man and a woman in sexual congress, all wired up to a bunch of machines. And you had those wires on you, those electrodes, as they're called, those electrode lines wired into complex computers, attached to the various parts of your body, attached to your eyelids, to your lips, to the sexual organs, to the expansion and contraction of your blood vessels. And you had all of these instruments that register and record the sensations that you're feeling in the act of sexual congress, the ecstasy and the delirium of sexual pleasure recorded by all these instruments is nothing compared to the reality of that delirium. And so the history of the tracking of chaos is extremely interesting, and you find it introduced wonderfully in this little clip, Chaos Theory, which explains how the escalation of computer sciences in the 60s went hand in hand with chaos theory. And of course, one of the culminating moments of this development was the emergence of the Mandelbrot set, following the work of Benoit Mandelbrot. Now, much to its credit, and I can't say this about a number of other clips and documentaries on fractals and chaos theory that you find on the internet, much to its credit, this little 5-minute piece specifies that fractals are merely the byproducts of processes in nature that cannot actually be plotted or programmed. They're the fossilized echoes or remainders of these processes. That's a brilliant observation, to my mind, that is an absolutely correct observation. And the Mandelbrot set itself is a fossil or byproduct of a momentous cosmic event. I'm going to point out that in episode 5 of the 1.0 version of the Fallen Goddess scenario, the Mandelbrot set comes into view. Well, what is it, the Mandelbrot set, in the context of Sophia's adventure? The Mandelbrot set is our conceptual model of the effect that was produced in the Dima, the dense elementary matter arrays of the galactic limb, by the impact of the torrent of organic light of the divine Sophia. To put it in rather more crude terms, the Mandelbrot set is the formation that was produced when the divine Sophia sat on the face of the archons, the way a woman can sit on a man's face. She sat on their face, on the prosopon, on the face of the archons. The archonic activity that was produced by the divine Sophia, that was stimulated in an extraordinary and anomalous way by the Aeon due to her plunge, was a chaotic activity in the third galactic limb of our galaxy. And it is impossible and inconceivable to know how that activity occurred. The closest that we can come to it is through the understanding of the autonomic and pronoic power of an aeon. That is to say, that an aeon, a divine being, by merely intending a form to appear, will cause that form to occur. And so, it also happens, miraculously, even if the aeon doesn't intend it, because the power of aeonic intention, which is called pronoia in Greek, is so immense that it produces such results. So, when the torrential current of organic light of the divine Sophia surged out of the pleuromic core and impacted itself upon the material of the third galactic limb, it was like a woman in an erotic act sitting on a man's face. And the configuration of that act of sitting or squatting is what we see in the Mandelbrot set. And the Mandelbrot set, of course, is the outstanding icon of chaos theory or complexity theory as we know it today. So to bring this little briefing back home, let's return to the crux of the matter. Let's return to the moment, as they say, when the rubber hits the road. Chaos theory, which has recently been named complexity theory, is an extremely interesting development, perhaps the most interesting development in 20th century physics. The short YouTube clip which I've linked called Chaos Theory refers to Poincaré, which is the correct way to pronounce his name. And Poincaré, of course, cites the three-body problem. He defined the three-body problem. And I could say, speaking from the Gnostic and Sophianic viewpoint, that we are actually living in the three-body problem. What is it then? What is the three-body problem? It is the challenge to experience how we can engage in the initial conditions of cosmic events by extreme sensitivity. Those of you who are following the Gaia Navigation Experiment, those of you who listen to my talks, who receive the crew notes, may get lost at times. You may be overwhelmed by the density and complexity of this material. You may find that there's a bit more astronomy, technical astronomy, than you care to digest. You may find it difficult to keep up with the apogee and perigee surges at the same time that you're tracking the Dakini shifts timed to the new moon, at the same time that you're observing other planetary or systemic phenomena, such as the transit of Jupiter in relation to the lunar apogee, or the retrograde cycle of Saturn in the Virgin, or the retrograde cycle of Mars in the Lion. All of these things may seem too complex and overwhelming for you. So I'm making this briefing to give you a little piece of Navigator's advice. And it goes like this. Don't be too concerned with what you're missing. And don't be too confused about the elements and aspects of these briefings that you ought to follow. Rather than that, pay attention to one fundamental factor, which is extreme sensitivity. But specifically, pay attention to your extreme sensitivity. That is to say, what you are extremely and acutely sensitive to. So, as you absorb the material of the Navigator briefings, and you read the crew notes, and you follow my indications on the course of correction, allow yourself to select and respond to those factors which strike you most immediately, to those factors which speak to your extreme sensitivity. And I am sure that this method will work for everyone in the individual manner that suits each person. So, you're certainly not going to be able to follow, for instance, the entire range of planetary movements that are happening right now. The retrograde cycle of Mars, the retrograde cycle of Saturn, the stall of the lunar apogee, the movement of Venus into the Pleiades and beyond, the retrogradation of Venus from a certain star in the constellation of Auriga, and on and on and on. These are the details of correction that I use to plot the course of correction. It's my job as a navigator to report on these details. But each of these details and each of these elements in the massive complex of the mythography of Sophia's correction will speak to each one of you in a somewhat different way. And so each one of you as an individual is disposed to different elements in this material. Of course, I want to emphasize again that everyone who follows the Gaia Navigation Experiment needs to know the entire story. You need to know and to comprehend and to retain the 9 episodes of the Fallen Goddess Scenario 1.0. You'll find that laid out in narrative terms in my book, Not in His Image. And you'll find it in a couple of places on metahistory.org. But right now, entering into the second year of correction, those of us involved with the Gaian Navigation Experiment are developing the FGS 2.0, the Fallen Goddess Scenario 2.0. That is the amplified and expanded version of 1.0. And as we move into this 2.0 version, there's a lot of material coming from the Navigator. There's a lot of rich and complex material, astronomical, mythological, and even anatomical and physiological, that plays into the course of correction. Don't be concerned about getting lost. Don't be concerned about being confused or overwhelmed. If you're not overwhelmed, you're not in the process. If you're overwhelmed, you're in the process. Just get used to the feeling of being overwhelmed by the richness and magnitude of this material. Get used to that feeling and trust that your own intelligence and your sensitivity will select the elements that you can observe in your own real-time, real-life experience. Nothing about this process has to be abstract or theoretical. So I'm encouraging you in this briefing to navigate chaos. And when you navigate chaos, you do it by a technique that requires two steps or two procedures. The first procedure is that you simply surrender yourself into the richness and magnitude of the chaos. Surrender to the richness and magnitude of Gaia's correction, of Sophia's divine activity of correction. Surrender into it. Allow yourself to belong in that process. And then within that act of surrendering and immersion, which is always overwhelming, even for me, within that process, the highlights that you can follow will be selected according to your extreme sensitivity to the conditions of the experiment. Don't worry about it. Don't try to track it all and put it all together intellectually. You'll never be able to do that. I can't even do that myself. But if you allow yourself to trust your own sensitivity and to feel and observe what is unfolding inside you, in your psychic life and in your body, as well as outside you, in the world of nature, in the things you observe around you, if you just allow yourself to do that, then you can attune to the most intense points of your own sensitivity as a human animal. And at those intense points of sensitivity, of extreme sensitivity, to use the syntax of chaos theory, you engage. You engage. Everyone engages the same experiment, but we all engage it at different points of sensitivity. So this is the advice I would give you in this briefing. And as I said, in connection with this briefing, you will find under crew notes 18, which are going out today, April 5th, you will find the two links to the YouTube clips, one which is called Chaos Theory, and the other is called Chaos Theory Documentary. Just want to point out two things in closing. One thing is that the second clip, Chaos Theory Documentary, which is 10 minutes long, is irritating. First of all, there's a minute, it opens with a minute of terrible music. I don't know what it is about people who upload YouTube clips, but I think that most of them, I suspect that most of them are mentally damaged in some manner. Even people who upload YouTube clips that have a great educational value, such as this one on Chaos Theory Documentary, are compelled to put the most disgusting and deplorable music into the clip. I don't know why they do this. It happens all the time. And so I ask you to be patient, because there is some really awful music on this chaos theory documentary. Also, the second thing you'll find on there is a nerd or two discoursing on science. Unfortunately, unless we have some women dancing and doing the dance of the seven veils while they're discoursing on chaos theory, which I would love to see, I don't think it's going to be possible to avoid these nerds and these really pitiful creatures who are expounding to us the meaning of fractals and Poincaré and the Mandelbrot set. But anyway, there it is, for its value, for what it's worth. I think that this chaos theory documentary is valuable, at least for watching one time, because it describes better than any other clip I've seen exactly how the Mandelbrot set was generated mathematically. And that's a kind of an interesting piece of information and something of value to know. But all in all, I would like you to come away from these two YouTube clips and from this briefing with an increased sense of confidence and perhaps a sense of relief. Don't have to worry about being overwhelmed. It's natural. You don't have to worry about following every detail and nuance of this process. No one can. But the message here is to trust your own sensitivity and resonate to that in the experiment which resonates to you. And that way you can engage it, and eventually confidence grows, and eventually the grounding of this experiment in your life and even in your physical body becomes a voracious and self-evident process. So I wish that to each and every one of you. I thank you for your participation, and I wish you safe passage. So long for now.